On today's episode of Horror Talk with Kristen West, we introduce you to the filmmakers behind Streamer the Movie, an official selection of the Concrete Dream Film Festival. Let's watch the trailer.
Anyone feeling lonely?
Hello, Mr. Darcy.
Why don't you tell me about your day?
Spent some time with this girl.
Why don't you tell me about her?
We like the same things. I think we're a good match, like physically.
Sounds like you're really feeling her.
She's got a really nice smile. And when she smiles, I smile.
Are you in love?
She has a boyfriend.
Are you sure I can't lose this bikini for you?
I just want you to like me. That's all.
Let's give a round of applause for Streamers again. Streamer again, everybody. Thank you. So we have Jared,
yep.
We have Tanya, the lead actress, and Jared, what inspired you and Vincent to do this very intense character study?
I did a short film, same title, called Streamer, back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
That short tackles all of the overlapping themes: loneliness, mixed signals, a battle of the sexes, what's real, what's not, mental health, even though we don't hit people over the head with that. But I did that short in 2013, and really the short, more so than the feature, came out of personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then the summer of 2014, it was Vincent who called me up and pitched me the idea of, hey, what do you think about adapting that short into a feature film? It seemed practical and contained enough. And at that point, we were dead set on just going out and doing it. So it just seemed like a natural evolution for the short film anyway. And that was where it all began.
That's amazing. Now, you co-directed,
yeah,
co-wrote this with Vincent. What's it like to co-direct and co-write?
That's a good question, because I've co-directed before, but like with really close friends. So with Vincent did the cinematography for the short film. I met him through a mutual friend that I met at film school. But there was we had broken the ice in just working together. And we had done a concept trailer before that we co-directed before we did this feature. But honestly, doing the feature, what was it like? It just a lot of patience. It was my first experience having to really debate every single thought or intention or action with somebody else, because it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm. And they had opposite points of view about almost everything.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're like, if Vincent says day, I say night.
Ah.
And it's not like we're trying to like stir up controversy, but it's just we're two different people, but we both have the same end game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think this all worked out. So on my end, for me, I can only speak for myself personally, just a lot of patience. And I don't know, it's easily for me to take things personally, so I had to like step back and just be like, it's whatever we're debating or arguing or trying to settle on or compromise on, it's not about us, it's about what is best for the story we're trying to tell.
Overall, with two directors and two very different points of view, the film is actually extremely cohesive.
Yeah.
It feels like there was one mind and one voice. So if there wasn't agreement at times, I think if anything, it added dramatic tension more than anything else. Now, Tanya, how did you get involved in the film?
So that's funny. I was stopped acting for about 5 years. I was working in the human rights field, and I missed acting too much. I went back, I did a play, and somebody came to my play and said, come to my networking event. And I hate networking. I hate like the awkwardness of new people. But I went to one, and I walked in and I talked to Jared and Vincent. Huh? It was the only networking event I've gone to, and they happened to be there. And we met up later, and we did coffee, and I read the initial script, which is very different, but I loved it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you didn't call me to read for it for, like, a couple months. And I was like, okay, I guess that's done. And then, yeah, we came and we did the audition scene, and Jared was my reader.
Yep.
And something kind of clicked.
Interesting. So you actually work in human rights.
Yes.
I think one of the pitfalls as women in acting is that there are certain ways of viewing women, mm-hmm. especially women in sex work.
Yeah.
How did you approach this role and this very intimate look at a sex worker's life?
So, you know, typically when we talk about sex workers, you know, most of the time people are trafficked, they're owned. There is not a lot of room to negotiate. However, so when I did my master's and I was researching trafficking, I did make contact with a woman in Australia. She works in social work, and she sells sex. And when I spoke to her and I read her articles, she was very much like, this is me, this is what I want to do. So I said, okay, so, you know, a cam sex worker is a very different, it's a different thing. It's, you know, it's you're not physically having sex with somebody. And, you know, at a strip club, when you look at, okay, if it's a woman's stage, right, she can do what she wants. What really I find personally makes it derogatory in a strip club is the announcer's voice. Somebody else taking away and wrapping her up in a package. So I think as a woman with a sex, you know, being a sex worker with a cam, and I have control over it, okay, that's let's take it from that point of view. And then I thought, on the other hand, you know, every time you work in any job, there's people you have to deal with and you don't like what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time when I'm smiling at the client and I'm just thinking, I hate everything you're saying. And he's telling me what to do at points, lean mm-hmm. closer,
right.
smile. And I'm just thinking, you know, what's really going on in your mind? You know, you're pleasing the client, you want the session to end, but what are you really thinking about that person? And I try to really portray that as if that was me, because it could be any of us at any time, right, in any different scenario. So,
yeah. Right, there's an interesting dynamic there. I love how you're speaking to that veneer that you often, people buy into a fantasy, but they don't see or have empathy for the person that is fulfilling that fantasy. And for you, Jared, I think one of the things about it also was the isolating effects of the web and social media. How did you get to that place in your portrayal, which I think was very truthful
right.
on so many
right.
levels of that isolation?
How did I get to that place? It's a good question. I think, I moved to Toronto in 2009. And I went right into a 9-month film production intensive, which was great because I was able to, you're forced to interact and be part of a collective right off the bat. And 3 out of like the 9 person people in that class are close friends of mine right now. So it was a great experience. But there was definitely that period once the 9-month intensive ended, where it was like, okay, I was already in reality. I was already done with school as far as I was concerned. But yeah, living in a new environment, I think there's definitely a slump period where things hit me, where I felt very lost and alone.
Mm-hmm. So you use that?
I used, again, going back to the short, I felt like I was tapping into stuff I was going through when the short was going on, because again, the short really came from a more personal experience. And then I always say, like, it's a version of, like a heightened version of an older self of me.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, going, like, even tapping into, like before the short even took place. So, it's a lot of, like, all that stuff. But at the same time, I don't know, like, it's not like I'm intentionally setting dots to hit or beats to hit.
Right.
I just know it's all-encompassing,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't exactly tell you. Like, it's not like I'm pulling from this at any specific moment. I knew I naturally had a connection in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just relied on that organic sense of, well, there's something here.
So let's talk genre for a minute. We're obviously at the Concrete Dreams Film Festival at the Artist Corner Gallery. Thank you so much, Artist Corner Gallery, for having us. Now we're avant-garde art house experimental film. How do people characterize this film? I've heard horror, I've heard experimental, I've heard art house. What do you call yourself?
I've just been going with psychological drama. At one point I was saying psychological thriller, but I think we're set on psychological drama.
So, okay, psychological drama. And Tanya, I want to talk to you about genre too, because horror, art house, experimental, avant-garde, there's a lot of women are in the discussion of how they're portrayed in those genres. When you started in this film and with Vince and Jared, was genre a consideration for you when you were reading the script and trying to maybe push some boundaries as well?
I didn't feel like this film was constrained by genre, okay, which I thought was great. It was the themes that were interesting to explore. I mean, the idea of entitlement, right? Like the male character feeling entitled to sex, entitled to someone's time. I mean, that's something that we don't really talk about, right? But it's when you look at, you know, the other, there's been a few recent cases too with men that identify as incels and voluntary celibates and feeling and being angry at women, feeling that they have a right, you know, versus a woman's right to have friendship with whoever she wants.
Right.
And so I thought, I mean, that's such an interesting thing to negotiate. And also the idea of, you know, possessiveness. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of people have been in relationships where someone gets possessive, but there's times when it happens outside the bounds. So these things were, I thought, were really interesting to explore. And you know, by not being super set on one genre, I think we had that freedom.
I have another question to ask you. Is your character a victim?
Well, it's interesting because victim is typically we call a stage, right? So if something happens to you, you are the victim of somebody else's action. Whether you choose to self-identify as a victim later or identify as a survivor, I mean, that's really, I think, up to the person to decide.
Right.
Because you do have a right to say, you know, something happened to me and it was not okay and that was somebody else's action. So I'm a victim of their action. That's not on me, that's on them. At the same time, if you choose to say, I survived and I'm a survivor, that's how I identify and I'm not a victim, then that's okay too. I don't know if...
Do you think your character would identify that way? It's a hard question.
Yeah, it is a hard question.
Because at some point I didn't know how to feel about her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think, like I said, I think they are stages and I think it's about time. I think most people go through a few different... Are you talking about her in terms of being a sex worker in general?
Yeah.
So I chose to not take that approach for her, even though that is the more common reality
right.
for people in sex work, is that they're typically being exploited. Most sex workers are very, very poor. Most of the time they're being exploited. I chose not to take that with her, even though it is the rare case. At the same time, you know, well, it's interesting because we filmed a take where, and we didn't keep it, but it was a take where I didn't like what he was saying. He kept saying, be you, and it's like, okay, buddy, I'm not giving you my real personality, no thanks, and I actually shut the laptop on him. You know, I had that ability to say, I'm not in a room with a physical person that can hurt me. I'm able to say bye.
Right.
And I thought, that was interesting because that makes it different than you're less vulnerable in that sense,
right.
But then you're very, very vulnerable if somebody does see you in real life, especially if they don't have the respect to tell you that they've been visiting you online, right?
Right.
Or you're being lied to.
You don't, your anonymity gets compromised, an anonymity which you certainly would rely upon in your profession.
Yeah.
What about you, Jared? Did you perceive your character as a victim?
No, I don't perceive him as a victim. It's interesting, every time I watch it, I have different reactions.
Mm-hmm.
So like, sometimes I watch it and I just want to slap the shit out of it.
Me too.
Tonight when I was watching it, I actually got kind of emotional when I watched like the turmoil and just that downward spiral, like, yeah, I don't know, it just depends on what night and the environment that I watch this in. No, I don't perceive him as a victim. A victim of being in his own head, maybe.
Victim of being in his own head, and so many of us are in our own heads. There's been high praise for this film. It's been called the Taxi Driver for the Digital Age. And you can certainly see that in the film. I would like to open it up to audience questions. Does anybody have any questions? Just kind of pop your hand up in the air. Yes, in the back.
The cinematography was excellent, and the lighting, and aside from the acting, which was amazing, but the post-production work, so over the top. I mean, just on and on. How long did it take for you guys to have this thing edited and mixed and colorized and done?
Yeah. Okay, so the other screening we had in November 2016 at the Blood and the Snow Canadian Film Festival, we were hauling ass to complete the cut because we got accepted just to have something to show. We're trying to sell the film now, so we've had to do all this. The work, we basically, like, this cut is our newest final cut, and this was done, had it uploaded like 2.5 weeks ago.
Wow.
So it's not like things were drastically being worked on, but you know, the accumulation of all these minor tweaks and stuff, it's still work. Like when I'm writing a script and I change one word, already that counts as the next draft. So that's how I look at the editing too. Like if we make one change, we've got a new cut. And so yeah, 2.5 weeks ago we completed it, finalized it, because our sales agent, we're trying to like legally complete everything so they can be with it out in the world trying to sell it. So the work is never ending.
It's called being obsessive.
Yeah, going all in. But to complete it anyway, to at least screen it the first time in 2016 was a mad kind of, we were still doing pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh wow.
Like, I don't know, 3 weeks before the screening, and then burning the Blu-ray, and the music was still...
When did we get Jen on? Like,
Jen Gorman, who did the soundtrack, which I think is just
we love.
Fucking awesome. She was like sending us the music tracks right up to the screening. So it's just the sound, the guy, Dante Winkler, who did the sound design and the mix, like fucking on the phone with him to 4 a.m. right before that November 2016 screening. And then we've still been tweaking things up until 2.5 weeks ago, so it's just been a freaking process. Look, like, if I were to be completely honest, I'll just say that, like, there is a part of me that relates to, like, the outcast or the outsider. There's a part of me that always does feel alone and lost, and I don't know where it comes from. I come from a very stable, loving family upbringing. But it's just something that I've kind of like come to realize is in me.
Well, it's a common denominator in humanity.
The funny thing is they're both lonely. Like nobody seems to comment that, but you know, the female character is new to the city. She seems to know one person and that's her boyfriend. And being on the webcam, I mean, that seems to be one of her only interactions with people.
Right.
Right? So you've got loneliness by someone who has power in the sense that she can have a boyfriend. You know, she's able to speak with people, but she is still lonely. And she is still, most of her social interactions are also on screen.
Well, I think it's interesting because there's a criticism in film in particular, especially horror film, where female characters are often divorced from other female characters. The female mm-hmm. characters don't have female friendships. But here it does add to her loneliness. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
I'm trying to understand as a man, and so your character, mm-hmm. she couldn't be honest with her boyfriend. He didn't even want her in love scenes. So he probably doesn't know that she's a webcam girl.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then I love the scene where you two are honest with each other. Of course, it was all in your imagination, and it never really happened, because nobody does that. But like, I thought your character was actually going to say, hey, I've been watching you on the webcam, and then she would be pissed off. But then there's finally one guy who accepts her as she is. And I was just going, of course... She wouldn't probably date that guy because he's a loser. We saw her on the webcam. I'm just in my mind.
All that stuff is what's happening in this movie.
Yes.
These are like archetypes and people we've all had this, and that's why your film is resonating.
Because like your character really can't be honest with any guy she's dating.
Yeah, and the truth is, for any woman that's, I think women in lots of careers, you date someone who's supportive of you and your dreams. They like you because of your dreams, and then they actually get very jealous and they can't handle it. I mean, that dialogue was from my past relationship, where I can't be in a kissing scene or a sex scene and be an actress. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you knew that this was what I wanted when we started dating, and now you're trying to take bits of me away, mm-hmm. right? And
yeah.
So it's interesting because we didn't even go with the sex work there. We even just went with acting, and there was already so many problems there.
Sure.
Right.
And of course, what's so interesting?
Wherever you turn, right?
Yeah.
And of course, what's so interesting and telling about that particular scene in this movie is it happens right between two dumpsters. You know?
Because it's garbage.
Right, it's garbage. So I would like to ask you, so streamher.com, is that a real site? Or did you make that site?
No, that's one of the tweaks we did 2.5 weeks ago.
Because
mm-hmm. We were using a real webcam site template. I tried to reach out to them to get their blessing.
Uh-huh.
I didn't expect to really hear back from them. So one of the things we did was change that site name in post to StreamHer, which I think works.
What was it called?
It's myfreecams.com. That's the actual site.
So your question is that you actually made that design of that page?
Well, like, we used their actual page.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing. I don't think there's anything you can see that you can really trace it to that site, but then we just like pasted over what says My Free Cams and said Stream Her.
Maybe. So, okay, I have to ask this. Were you actually streaming on a site? Was your performance actually?
No.
Okay.
We use Skype.
You use Skype.
For the
okay.
typing.
Okay.
And then
I was about
just,
to say, whoa, girl.
The, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. There's a lot of extreme close-ups in this movie, especially of you. And they're awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
As an actor, was it awkward and uncomfortable to have the camera probably right about here?
Well, I'll say again. So the short film was 10 minutes, and it took place in my bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent was shooting the short. That's kind of when we started working together. It ended up being really closely... very tight on the close-ups because there was nowhere to move. It was kind of like just by design.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of spilled over into the feature. And to be honest, it wasn't uncomfortable while we were shooting, only uncomfortable while editing.
So the truth is, unlike, you know, big sets, usually there's so many people running around and it's so chaotic and it's so unintimate. This whole thing was filmed so intimately. It was typically us, Vincent, occasionally Rob on sound, and you know, it was
so
just
like
us. It was just us, and we just sat there and we just did it over and over, and then we disagreed about how to do it, so then we tried it every way, and we improvised it, and we did it again and again and again, and it was so easy. It was almost like being on stage and that you could create that magic where you could actually just, you know, you didn't have to ignore 50 people running around because they weren't there.
That's amazing. Well, I think that comes through. You feel a little bit too close to everybody that's in the movie. I want to ask for any last questions before we... Nope. So, what are you working on now?
Well, I just want to add, because, George, you mentioned cinematography, or you mentioned cinematography?
I loved it. I know that.
So, like, Vincent Pun, the co-director, co-writer, co-editor, co-producer, he shot the film. And he won't say it, but I constantly say it for him. I think the guy has a natural, for whatever whatever aligns to my definition of cinematic, I think Vincent has a natural eye for it. So I just think if the movie looks great, Vincent is responsible for that. All I did was just say, I want red lighting. And then, yeah, we sometimes had premeditated shots. For the most part, it was on the fly. That's just a testament to his natural eye and lens. So I just want to give him his shout out on that because I do think it looks great.
Did the yellow light mean something else in the mise-en-scène work? of the film?
The yellow light?
There were some times where you were just kind of bathed in yellow light, as opposed to red light.
Not really. Like, for me, the red lighting is really important. It'll be in everything, and it has been in everything I've been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow lighting, not so much. A lot of times it was like, look, we shot outside a dumpster, there was available lighting.
Got it, okay. And it just happened to be yellow.
We can create symbolism. We can go through it.
Right, right.
Write it in there now.
We used a very subtle blue. We use the very subtle blue light in dark scenes, so it's actually not just dark, there's kind of a blue light added in there.
Okay.
And then, to answer your question about what's next, I've got a script that's written, it's called Blue Dream. I hope to act in it myself, again. I hope Tanya acts in it. It's more straight, I call it a noir thriller drama.
Okay.
But it's character driven, so.
A North thriller drama.
And
okay. It's
gritty.
It's
yeah. Grimy.
It's gritty and grimy.
And tense.
And Tanya, I'm sorry, what about you?
So after we filmed Streamer, I had a baby.
Oh,
so
really?
I had a little break. Thank you. So she's 14 months. This is my first weekend away from her. So I had a little break from acting, and I wrote my first book. And it's a dystopian young adult crossover that's going to be, I'm self-publishing. The final version's ready tomorrow for my editor, and I'll self-publish probably September.
And what's the title of that book?
The Wolf and the Rain.
The Wolf and the Rain. And where can we buy that book?
It will be on Amazon.
It's going to be on Amazon in a few weeks.
I'm actually going to get it out to all these wonderful advanced readers and book bloggers and everybody for a few months. I'm going to hold it back and then launch either September or October.
Wonderful. Awesome. So, Jared, where can we find you online and find your company, your film production company, and more about your filmmaking career?
So, our company that we just made legit is Can Eater Films. Right now it's Can Eater Films on Facebook. Streamerfilm.com is our official website. At streamerfilm on Twitter, streamerfacebook.com/streamerfilm, that's our Facebook page.
Did you notice that we actually ate candy in the film? There was a moment in the park when you were eating candy. Candy Eater Films, it's in there.
Nice. Nice. And Tanya, what about you? Where can we keep up with you? Because you've got a lot going on.
So for my book, it's TanyaLee.com, and there's a hyphen between, so TANYA-LEE.com. Yeah. And then I'm on IMDb for act and stuff.
Awesome. Let's give another round of applause for Streamer, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jared and Tanya. We really enjoyed your work.